Well, a few weeks ago, I had an opportunity to talk with Dr. Evan Alexander. He believes now there is an afterlife. He didn't before. Linda Moulton Howe continues with the story when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Linda. I'm so glad you've been able to follow up with Dr. Evan Alexander. What an incredible story.
It is. And before I get into it, I would just like to pick up from the last story on Alaska, that to Earth Files viewers and Coast to Coast listeners that have any information about the alleged underground pyramid structure west of Mount McKinley, Alaska, please email me, earthfiles@earthfiles.com. All requests for confidentiality are honored, and hopefully I will continue to learn more so I can report more. And now, it was 58 years ago that Evan Alexander was born in Charlotte, North Carolina, and then put up for adoption as a newly born infant. The family that adopted and named him encouraged his passions for learning and eventually for skydiving in college. Eben graduated from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill in 1976 with a major in chemistry. And then 4 years later in 1980, he graduated with an MD degree from Duke University Medical School. After that, he continued with a fellowship in cerebrovascular neurosurgery in the UK's Newcastle upon Tyne in Northern England. And after that, for the next 15 years, Dr. Alexander specialized in neurosurgery at Harvard Medical School as an associate professor of surgery and also worked at Brigham and Women's Hospital. Married with children, the couple decided to move from the city stresses of Boston to the more comfortable environment of Lynchburg, Virginia, where Dr. Alexander was hired in the Focused Ultrasound Surgery Foundation of nearby Charlottesville. And on the early morning of November 10th, 2008, 4 years ago, Evan Alexander woke up in such head pain and body paralysis that his wife called 911. For the next 7 days, Dr. Alexander was in Lynchburg General Hospital, baffling his colleague doctors and headed toward death. Eventually, it was discovered that E. coli bacteria was eating away at the base of his brain and the neocortex that surrounds the human brain, and that is what we use for higher functions, such as sensing and for muscle control, spatial reasoning, conscious thought, and language. And when the neocortex is seriously damaged, patients rarely recover. If they do, their speech and brain functions do not function well. While his doctors and family prepared for his passing on, Dr. Alexander went on a spectacular journey to the core of what he calls proof of heaven. His guide was a beautiful, angelic-looking girl. They started on the wing of a butterfly and joined thousands of other butterflies heading toward a place of what he describes as infinite darkness and infinite brightness, where he came to understand his soul had eternal life and consciousness beyond his body container. On the eighth day, when he was expected to die in the Lynchburg General Hospital, he suddenly opened his eyes, looked at his family and doctors with curiosity and awareness. 4 months later, he had written some 20,000 words about his journey on the butterfly with the angelic being, his guardian angel, that took him to the core of all there is. 4 years later, in October of 2012, his book, Proof of Heaven, was released and is now on the New York Times bestseller book list. At the end of the book, in chapter 35, Dr. Alexander reveals a major revelation about his near-death experience and its link to his original blood family that gave him up as a new infant for adoption. Recently, I talked with Eben Alexander, MD, about the revelation of the photograph that he received of the blood sister that he had never known in the blood family that gave him up, and why he is convinced that the E. coli destruction of his brain tissue means his brain was not functioning. So what took him on the wing of the butterfly with the angelic being to the core of the divine field must have been his soul. Here now is neurosurgeon Eben Alexander from Lynchburg, Virginia.
Meningitis is such a perfect model for human death because it attacks the whole outer surface of the brain. And that's where all of our human conscious awareness occurs. Now, there are deeper structures in the brain that participate in kind of igniting consciousness down in the thalamus and basal ganglia and down in the brainstem. But in fact, what we all know and being able to see things and hear things, being aware of our existence in space and of our surroundings, language and rational thinking and conceptualization, all those things occur in the cortex. If you really wipe out the cortex, you've basically gotten rid of all the elements of human consciousness.
So what part of you was watching and sensing?
I've come to realize in my new understanding of brain, mind, consciousness, soul and spirit, that our brain serves more as a filtering mechanism. Our spirit or soul is eternal. And here in our earthly incarnation, consciousness and mind are veiled. They are on this side of a veil that obscures our knowing of those higher realms. Spirit and soul is the true core of our consciousness. And that's the part that lives on very happily when brain and body die. It perceives by being part of all of the reality, and physics is very busy kind of demonstrating to us that there's no material in the material realm, talking about particles like electrons and quarks, neutrons, protons, photons, which are basically energy vibrations.
It was physicist David Bohm who described matter, all matter, as frozen light.
Right, exactly. And on my journey, I went far above and beyond, you know, that kind of simple four-dimensional manifold to higher levels, and other people have been there too. Certainly things like reincarnation and past lives and deathbed visions of departed souls and similarly in near-death experiences is the time flow in that outer realm. Time flow is very different. And in fact, from that outer realm, you have access to our space-time that is really unrestricted. And you can go backwards and forwards and everything. One really has to expand their view of how physical reality works to start to get some of these concepts about consciousness.
If I understand what you're saying, you're describing soul spirits exiting and entering body containers throughout the cosmos on a regular basis, as if reincarnation is the machinery of the universe?
I would say that's true. The word reincarnation is somewhat misleading because from out there you can see reincarnation happening before an incarnation, and yet there is still a higher purpose that does involve a causality and does involve a manifestation of our soul's free will. But we do that free will manifestation down here kind of in the murky, imperfect, evil and injustice haunted realm of our physical earthly plane. But that is why it means so much to have this veil and to be doing a lot of this on faith. When we're behind the veil, between lives and deep meditative states, we're able to see a lot more of that higher purpose and how love, in its truest and most fundamental sense, is right at the core of it all.
At the beginning of your experience beyond your brain, you were on the wing of a butterfly, and there were so many butterflies.
Absolutely beautiful beyond description. A river of living color, and it was a very profound and strong memory. And of course, when I came back, I would tell people that, and certainly skeptics would look at me like, what kind of a nutcase, you know? How can you be serious talking about this? I said, look, I'm just telling you what was there. You know, I'm not going to edit it because it's unpopular. That's what my whole book is. I put out there my story. All I know is that it was absolutely beautiful and loving, had everything to do with what I call my guardian angel, and had everything to do with that's where I first witnessed the divine, that breeze blowing through, and the absolute knowing of the power of that divine. which we can all know. We don't have to almost die. We can get there in prayer and deep meditation. We can feel that same thing.
Could you explain, when you returned, how long it was before you discovered who the beautiful angelic being on the butterfly wing was with you?
Well, I'll tell you, I had spent those 6 weeks writing everything down. My father was not there. He had passed over 4 years earlier. And that there was this beautiful girl who I saw every time I went into that gateway on the butterfly wing. I could remember her face so perfectly that I knew when I woke up and was kind of getting my bearings that I could remember the visual of her face, how beautiful she was. I knew I had never met that woman in my life. And that part was very haunting. It was 4 months out when all of a sudden those parts came together for me in the most powerful fashion. It had to do with the fact that I was adopted. I was put up for adoption when I was a few weeks old, was adopted at 4 months, and had actually been rejected by my birth mother in the year 2000. My adoption story had everything to do with finding out the deepest part of mystery of this, because I came to find out that my guardian angel was my birth sister, who had passed over in 1998. I never knew her. She never knew about me in the earthly realm.
Your experience from the matter world to, let's say, the divine field occurred in 2008, correct?
Right, in November of 2008.
When was the first moment that you saw a photograph of your blood sister who had passed a decade before this event that made you realize the angelic being on the butterfly wing was, in fact, your blood sister?
About 4.5 months after my coma. And my birth sister just sent me this picture. And a key part of it was that I got that picture and it was very moving to me. I mean, just shocking to see this beautiful sister that I'd never met. But it was really the next morning when I was reading the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross story about the 13-year-old girl who had a near-death experience, was welcomed into that all-loving, infinite comfort of the divine by her brother. And then she came back. But she couldn't understand that. She explained to her father, "I don't have a brother." And he said, "Well, you did, but he died 3 months before you were born. We never told you about him."
Wow.
And I read that and looked up at that picture on my dresser, and I went, "Oh, my God." And that is when it struck me. And the look she was giving me was almost like, "Do you finally get it?" Oh, my gosh. It was so stunning. The reality of it was absolutely the biggest shock I've ever had in my life. Finding her identity, for me, was absolutely validating in a very solid way.
And it means somehow that the machinery of souls recycling in and out of containers reinforces that there is some true reason for families and why families end up in the chemistry and the mix that they are.
Right.
And that the family is important not only in the living life of the matter world, but is key to what happens at the moment of death and afterwards.
That's very important. As an adoptee, I would love to point out that this is not just about your biological family. This is everything to do with your soulmates. And they may be biologically related or they may not. In my case of adoption, it shows very clearly how you really have to consider it all. Don't limit it to saying my biological family. For me, it was very powerful to realize that both my adoptive family and my birth family played tremendous roles in my understanding of that other realm and in that higher spiritual journey of our souls that you're alluding to.
So to use your metaphor, if the earth is a soul school, and that is why the yin and yang, the evil, the good, the white, the black, are necessary here to teach the soul spirit, then where you went with the orb and to the core would be sort of beyond the university where the souls have learned so much that they cannot do wrong.
Right. And it's interesting that, in a sense, I was veiled from my previous life. I was veiled from my earthly life when I was there. And that part is strange. I wrote this entire experience up when I first got out of the hospital. Got to realize that when I first came out of coma, I was just beginning to even get language back. And then it took me probably 2 weeks to get a lot of family memories back, and then probably more like 3 or 4 weeks to get a lot of my neuroscience, neurosurgical knowledge back. And then I had to learn a tremendous amount about consciousness beyond that. But it was an incredible work for really 3.5 years to write this whole story. But all of that initial writing, my older son had advised me, write everything down, don't read anything about near-death experiences, about physics, cosmology. And he gave me that advice 2 days after I got out of the hospital. I wanted to write it up as a neuroscientific report. And he said, if you want it to be of any value at all, don't read anything. Just write it all down. And so 6 weeks later, I had 20,000 words. And then I did start reading. And I was so shocked to see all the similarities of my experience, especially the ultra-reality, which was so hard to explain. And yet there were some things that were also different about my experience. And one is the fact that I didn't remember my earthly incarnation.
And George, one of the big mysteries to me in my life, and I discussed this with Dr. Alexander in the next half hour, is why should there be such a closeness of evil in this earth plane, on this planet that we all see and wrestle in terms of violence and war? And along those lines, I wanted to share something that is sort of like going to a parallel CD track to all this. And that is the book called Moving Toward Omega that psychologist Kenneth Ring wrote in the 1980s. I met and talked with him, and this was his effort to look at people in the human abduction syndrome and people in the near-death experiences and to parallel, put down on a piece of paper, eventually went into a book, about where there were similarities and where there were differences. And I've always remembered reading that book and talking with him that the human abductees and the near-death experiencers all said approximately the same thing about the Earth, perhaps this matter world of this entire universe, being something like a soul school, exactly as Dr. Alexander has just referenced. And that what we are missing, what we are not understanding, is that we go through these cycles of our soul, spirit, in and out of containers. And the containers can be humans or humanoids, they can be animals, they can be plants, they can be creatures of all sorts. And that it is the process of going in and out of the containers over a limitless period of time that begins to refine the soul so that it can go into what Dr. Alexander is going to describe more in the next half hour, what is the core of all that there is, which has this interesting juxtaposition itself of being infinitely dark and infinitely bright at the same time. If you wrestle with that in your head, you come, I think, to a pattern that a lot of us have been intrigued by probably most of our lives and don't fully understand. And that is the yin and yang symbol, which he and I also talk about in this coming half hour.
When we come back with Linda Moulton Howe, of course, as she just mentioned, we'll continue with Dr. Alexander. And in our final hour, we'll have conversations with Linda back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And of course, as I mentioned, we'll take your phone calls next hour with Linda Moulton Howe. And when we come back, let's finish up the story of the incredible journey that Dr. Alexander took. And Linda, let's wrap up Dr. Alexander and see what we got.
Well, in his chapter 15, in his book, Proof of Heaven, he writes this, quote, I saw the earth as a pale blue dot in the immense blackness of physical space. I could see that earth was a place where good and evil mixed, and that this constituted one of the unique features. Even on Earth, there is much more good than evil, but Earth is a place where evil is allowed to gain influence in a way that would be entirely impossible at higher levels of existence. That evil could occasionally have the upper hand, was known and allowed by the Creator as a necessary consequence of giving the gift of free will to beings like us. I have puzzled over that. I highlighted this when I read the book. And now let's return to my question to Dr. Alexander about this issue of evil and good juxtaposed together.
What do you think is the agenda of the core of the infinite divine field in placing us in the matter worlds in such close juxtaposition to evil?
I think it has to do with our progressing in that outer realm. There is a true causality in that higher realm, which is independent of the causality we see in this realm. And that outer causality that's much more important has to do with the ascendance of our souls by becoming closer and closer to God through manifesting more and more of showing love, compassion, love for our enemies, and to see that things like hurdles, difficulties, challenges in life, and of course as a doctor that includes illness and disease, to see them in a much richer and more holistic way of viewing our existence as souls, recognizing that our souls actually do come back, that we have soul mates, we have soul partners, and those soul mates might be incarnated as our nemesis, my enemy, in this incarnation. I mean, I've recognized that in my own life, that they are here to help me learn difficult lessons. And that's how I look at illness and disease now, too, and how I approach healing. It has everything to do with having a much more holistic view of a given soul's connectedness to other souls and also their life here, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual planes, and seeing kind of their soul purpose and the lessons that they're here to learn, which are often very difficult and often are underlying disease and illness.
Isn't it odd that we are on a planet in which the Western world at the end of 2012 seems obsessed with the container when the most important part of everything in life is the soul spirit?
I really think a lot of people in our culture are actually very ready to hear this. It's always surprised me that when you look at the NDE literature, those people who have near-death experiences in our culture, in the Western world, because of the worship of the material realm and the fact that in that material worship, you kind of think, well, it's birth to death. Whoever has the most toys when he dies wins. I think there are a tremendous number of people who are ready to hear that there's much more meaning and purpose in our lives. And it has to do with knowing the eternity of our souls. And as I was saying a minute ago about the near-death experiences, 85% or 90% of those reported are these wonderful experiences where people feel the love and they're ready to let go. They're ready to let go of the material realm, let go of that ego and self, and embrace that incredible, infinite, unconditional love right there at the core.
Why do you think that what you call the core with a capital C is both infinite darkness and infinite brightness?
Well, it's a little hard to put into words. It has something to do with the notion of duality, of kind of mind and brain. Part of that darkness and lightness, that's how I describe it here. And yet I know it is something very different. It's much more of a whole. And even though it sounds like a contrast here, to have infinite darkness that's all loving, completely loving, combined with this brilliant orb of light. And of course, as you can tell from having read the book, I sensed that divine, infinite God presence. And in fact, I could not use the word God. I couldn't use any word when I came back because the awe inspired by that was so extreme that it completely goes beyond any human description, any words, any images, anything. And it's been kind of a struggle for me to come back down to even using the word God because I think that's so limiting and people get the wrong impression. And certainly scientists get the wrong impression. That's why they are seduced into thinking they have a theory of everything because they're nowhere remotely close to knowing everything. And likewise, religious writings are very misleading to even talk about, use words, and to even describe God. And other people who have had NDEs know this too. Having been there, they know that not only is it difficult to apply words to the experience, if not impossible, but it also just absolutely does not convey the awe and power of it.
Is this why you chose to use the word OM that I associate with sound frequency?
Well, when I was writing all this up, I could not use the word God because that was such a minimal concept in my previous mind compared to what I had seen. And I did use Om as my label, and it was just because I remember hearing that in that deepest, darkest, and brightest part of the core was this awesome Om sound, and I brought that back.
When I read that word Om, I thought of frequency and the way Genesis begins, in the beginning was the word, which you think of as sound. And I wondered if you had any insight into the divine field, let's call it, being something that was more frequency because it is not matter.
Well, I think frequency is a very good way to look at it because I think the entire higher dimensional multiverse is all about frequency and about ratios between dimensions, about the speed of light, which is simply a ratio between what we have as our consciousness manifested time dimension and our distance dimensions. But I think that's a very good point. So much of this is about frequency and especially ratios in higher dimensions. And even the physics models now, or especially if you start looking at things like string theory, I mean, it's all just about vibrating strings of energy at the subatomic level at the very core of all reality. And that's certainly something that I use a lot in my meditation, is I use auditory signaling that is, I think, very important in helping me get to deep meditative states. How I'm using the meditation, how I'm using my conscious states, has to do with altering frequency and adjusting frequency to get to deeper and deeper levels.
Do you think the yin and yang symbol is a representation over centuries of the core?
Yes, I think it is. And it also tells us, it's a lesson about that oneness that's at the very foundation of all existence, you know, that many would call God. Physicists like John Wheeler and Frederick von Weizsäcker were realizing that information might be at the very core of all existence. In my view, it's a very short step to say that it's this infinitely loving one consciousness of what some people would call God, but it's clearly the source of that unconditional love at the very core. But you're right, the yin-yang symbol shows kind of the duality that emerges as you bring that knowing out into this realm. It's very interesting to me how difficult it is to bring that knowing out here, but people don't have to almost die to get this because they easily get it through very deep meditation. Tibetan monks and others who meditate deeply and through centering prayer, people get to know this, that oneness, on a personal basis.
But it is so difficult to understand why there must be evil as a part of this world.
Well, I think, you know, the best thing I can say about that is if this were all perfect and we all lived in this world of infinite good for each other and there was never the slightest hint of any evil or wrongdoing, that would not be the world that our higher souls actually yearn to get into, because they do, to get down in the down and dirty here on this side of the veil, where they know they'll be intentionally veiled from knowing those higher truths. But it's because this is soul school. This is where we get it done. And it's because the evil and the injustice are there. I must say I wrestled long and hard with that after I came back, especially because I knew that God I had seen was infinitely powerful without any question, and yet also infinitely loving. So how to reconcile that with especially the suffering of innocents, the suffering of animals, of children, and that was something I wrestled with for more than a year.
And you conclude that it is necessary because it is a soul school?
Well, yes. There's a reason why this world exists with its imperfections, and a reason that our higher souls keep putting on blinders and coming down here to live these lives in the imperfect earthly realm. You've got to have those options, and the evil and the difficulties that are there, they're all, as I see it, even though as a neurosurgeon working with a lot of patients who are facing death and life-threatening illnesses, I've seen a tremendous amount of suffering, and often in innocence, often with all the prayer in the world from the most wonderful people not seeming to serve a purpose to bring them back. But it's all about the lessons that we come here to learn. I think that in some sense our souls really choose these lives, and that means choosing those hardships and difficulties too.
What do you think it meant when the angelic orb, the beautiful girl, was leading you and you had that telepathic series of statements that ended with, you can do no wrong here?
Well, that was all about the comfort and the love of that realm, and I cannot tell you just how, I mean, just to even talk about it now just gives me shivers. It was just so overwhelmingly beautiful in every sense of the word. I admit that in retrospect, I didn't make it as clear as I should have, that there is nothing you can do wrong was the message to my higher soul on that butterfly wing. It has nothing to do with a message in this earthly realm, because we can do plenty of wrong in the earthly realm. And in fact, the whole reason for our existence is to avoid doing that, to make the right choices, to serve as conduits for that unconditional love. So I regret that some people read that you can do no wrong and they think, what kind of message is that? And I would agree, you know, that is absolutely not a message for this earthly realm, because our whole purpose for being is to show compassion, grace, courage, and love for our fellow souls.
And George, yep. Along these lines again of soul spirits recycling in and out of containers, one of the most extraordinary human abduction cases that I ever investigated was a woman in Porterville, California, who, when she was a teenager, began having all kinds of interactions with beings in light in her room and outside. And she even was allowed to be conscious as the beings tried to explain to her that she'd had rheumatic fever, her heart was damaged, she was not going to be able to survive in her container in the life that she was in, and that they, the entities working with her, said that it was vital that her soul spirit remain in this particular container on this planet for a period of time, and that they were reconstructing her in some cloning fashion in tubes of light known as resurrection technology by some people in the government. They refer to it that way. And that she watched herself in some sort of a tube come to life while she watched her body that she thought was the one that she had traveled there in die, and said to me, extending her arms, Linda, whose arms are these? Who was doing the watching? And I think that it relates to the issue of the soul spirit that is separate from the container. And this, she sent this to me when I began working with her in a large section in my third book, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, High Strangeness. This is from this woman, Linda Porter. And it ties, I think, so perfectly, again, with what Dr. Alexander is saying now about his experience, and resonates with what Dr. Ring had written about the comparisons between NDEs and human abductees back in the 80s. This is from Linda Porter. We abductees are caught in the middle of a series of ongoing events that will one day prove to be historically significant to the future of this Earth.
A little lost there, Linda.
While I was talking with you, the page flipped. That's what happened. There is much, much more to existence than we could ever begin to understand. Much of what we have been taught regarding the physical universe and the laws that govern it is wrong. This creature's civilization communicates difficult concepts via the use of symbols that radiate emotion. They use this form to get concepts across with their exact true meanings intact. No misinterpretations can occur. And then she goes on into, the universe is built on sound patterns, which is why so many different world dimensions can exist in the same space. Each is on a different frequency. Disrupt a world dimension to the point that you destroy the carrier wave that it exists on, and you have created a hole in existence that cannot support the dimension above it or below it. Each frequency, besides maintaining its own world dimension, also supports or holds in place the one above it and below it. Everything is interdependent. And I think that this concept that we have lived on this planet and we have not been taught the possibility that we are in a matter world in which Planck's constant has a certain relationship to distances in the atomic structure that allows matter to be solid and for us to be able to pick up a table or something without our hands passing through it. But I think that quantum physics itself is beginning to lead us more and more rapidly toward the concept that you could have an infinite number of dimensions, and that those infinite number of dimensions, coming back to Dr. Alexander and to Linda Porter, could relate to what happens to any given soul spirit at the moment of death, that there is an accumulation of resonances based on actions, based on free will actions and choices between evil and good, that then would determine the resonant frequency that that soul would go to after the moment of death in the dimension that was just lived, but not the death of the soul spirit, that there is an eternal evolution of the soul spirit that is not matter, in and out of containers, in many dimensions, and that this may relate to that haunting phrase in Genesis, or not Genesis, but in the New Testament, in which the figure Christ refers to the many mansions in his Father's world. And that we may finally, through the near-death experiences paralleled with the human abduction syndrome, begin to understand that we have not been understanding at all what our relationship is to other dimensions, other universes, and that what happens at the moment of death is another reality, another consciousness.
All right, Linda. Has there ever been a point in your life where you did not believe in the afterlife?
No. For some reason, I was born as a small child. My mom used to tell me that they never understood why I asked so many questions about God and Christ and the universe, because they weren't a strict church-going family. And I seem to have been born, and to this day, I have this very profound sense that there is an ally in the divine field, which is what I've always thought of, is that there is a divine field that is completely outside of the matter world. There's no entropy in the divine field. Entropy is where everything winds down, which is what's happening in this universe right now. And that the divine field would then be the consciousness, that which sets in motion all of the matter worlds, and that there is this dynamic that goes on forever between that divine field and the animus of the containers is the soul spirit.
And we're going to come back with you, Linda, in a moment. Conversations with Linda.